So video's ready?
There's no name tag.
Yeah, it's ready.
Right. Is that running? Can
no, that's not.
Sally, are we running?
This is
don't
on.
Don't worry about it.
It is on.
Make sure the recording is on.
It is on.
The recording is on.
Okay. So let's talk. All right. Good morning. I call to order the Committee on Budget and Appropriations with proper quorum present. And this would be a joint meeting for further proceedings, but I think the first item is budget only, so I'm
yes, sir, go ahead.
We could just go ahead, and Deputy County Attorney is here. Please introduce yourself for the record, and is item 14709.
Good morning, Chairman Alvarado, Jim Castroblanco, Chief Deputy County Attorney. Here regarding the matter before this committee is the City of Rye and City of Rye tax assessors attempt to deny tax exempt status to county property, specifically the restaurant / tiki bar that is part and parcel of the Playland amusement park. The City of Rye has decided that they wish to tax this as a separate parcel. We appeared there in front of the board, and they denied our application to keep it tax exempt. And in order for this property, and frankly any other properties that are similarly situated, to not be taxed by the local municipality, we are asking permission to commence litigation to make sure that that does not happen.
Time sensitivity of this?
Time sensitivity is that it's 30 days from the time the board's ruling comes down, which would be the 15th. So the reason we are here today is because in order to get the full board to vote on it in this evening and have it timely, it would not be timely were we to wait for the 17th to do that.
Well, that's Jim.
No, that's not
Jim.
All right, Jim. We hear you, so hopefully you can hear us.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Sorry, like.
All right. Okay. The issue here is timely. Yes, Mr. Williams. And then Mr. Burton.
Yes,
I guess.
I just have a few questions on this that I'd like for you to explain. One, I understand the need to commence litigation. However, the activity that is being conducted in the space, though it's county property, it is a private activity. It's a non-governmental activity. The government is not in the business of running a bar. And so it is not activity that is directly related or related to what the governmental activity normally is in that area, which is a park. And I don't see, could you discuss for us why is it that running a bar is so related to the activity of running Playland that it warrants an exemption? That's the first thing. The second question I wanted to address is the negotiations and the lease agreement between the county and the tiki bar. That when that contract was negotiated, were there provisions put in for the taxes so that the county would be made whole in the event that it had to pay? Like you do pilot agreements, for instance, when you do agreements with private enterprises on a governmental property, you have payments that are not taxes, but in lieu of taxes, there's a payment made. And my question to you is to respond to whether there was negotiations and a provision in the contract, in the lease contract with the tiki bar, that would reimburse the county for this tax in event the county is held responsible. And the third part, just one more point. The third point is that in the litigation, I didn't see the complaint. In the complaint, are you naming the tiki bar as a party to indemnification in event that we lose the case?
Let me answer them in the order of 2, 3, and 1. it is my understanding, and I viewed the lease a while ago, that if there is such a provision to make the county whole. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I'm happy to send the relevant portions to the members of the committee for them to review. I believe it would in fact be appropriate to name the bar, especially if there is such a clause in the contract, so that gets us to number three. Number one, we actually had extensive discussions about why this particular restaurant and bar, and it is mostly a restaurant, is in fact part and parcel of the entire functioning of Playland. And it's interesting because I'm kind of in the perfect position to appreciate why that is. As the father of a 13-year-old girl and 11-year-old boy, the 13-year-old girl will most assuredly not want me following she and her friends around Playland Park while they're enjoying their time. That's the kind of place where parents can go, sit down, have a quiet meal, you know, let the kids ride the dragon coaster and come down the log flume and do all of that, and enjoy, you know, a nice scenic bite to eat by the water. It is part of the entire landscape at Playland. It has been for decades. There has always been a restaurant-type establishment there. It is part of the entirety of what is Playland, just as the, you know, the cotton candy and the Zeppelins are. So it is really part of the whole experience. It's not just sort of a standalone you know, place that's out on its own and not really connected integrally to the functions of the park. That's why we believe it is, in fact, appropriate to continue the tax-exempt status of that, and frankly, the other eating establishments that are similarly situated in this park and others.
I just differ that I don't think the others are similarly situated, because I distinguish it because it's a bar that serves alcohol. I mean, it's a bar, and the others are not. The others are related to people going to a park. A hot dog is naturally part, or a hamburger stand, or a cotton candy, or sodas. These kinds of meals are peculiar to having a fun park. I don't see where a bar that serves alcohol is an activity that is so intricately related or indispensably related to a Playland park where children are. And that's why I wanted to I'm not talking about the non-bar portion of it.
Right.
I'm talking
right.
about the alcoholic, the license to sell alcohol and to do that. And that's, if there is some, just to cut my part of this short, if there is some authority that you're relying on for that, I'd like to, if you could send me a copy of it, with respect to the bar, not the, I understand the food part of it. I'm talking about the alcoholic part.
I'll certainly look for that.
Yeah.
But again, it's difficult to sort of separate the two. We kind of liken it to the food establishments that do sell alcohol at, for instance, the golf courses and other areas and that are, in fact, on county park property.
I have Mr. Burton, yep. Mr. Jenkins, and then Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, how many dollars are we dealing with here? What is the estimate of the taxes that would be paid by the county if the City of Rye's decision were to stand?
I don't have that number with me right now.
Can you give me an approximate number?
I can't, because I'm not sure what their total number would be. I know what the assessed value is, $300,000 for that particular parcel, but I'm not sure what that translates into the actual tax bill.
Okay, and do we know what the total assessment is of the park as a whole?
I don't believe there's an assessment made of the entire park. What they did is they basically carved out, even though it's not a separate tax lot, they carved out that section to just basically give that an assessment because they view that as separate and distinct.
Jim, you got to go on mute, dude.
How can they do that?
That's the
Jim.
Assessment.
Jim,
right,
you got to go on mute.
Question number one. Mm-hmm. All right, question number two is Glen Island Casino. Is run as a much more extensive facility than the Tiki Bar at Playland. Is Glen Island Casino taxed by the City of New Rochelle?
No.
Is there a reason why?
Probably because New Rochelle sees it as a county property.
Okay.
And basically inserting a function at the county level, and it is something that is considered exempt as a result.
Oh, excuse me. Jim.
Yes.
Can you go on mute? We're hearing all the movement you have in your office.
What's the problem?
We're hearing a lot of movement, and it's very annoying at this end. So can you just put us on mute, and if you need to speak, come off mute?
Yes, welcome. Thank you.
All right, thanks. I'm sorry.
So you're not aware, or you say that Glen Island is not taxed by the City of Rye, the City of New Rochelle.
That is correct.
And similarly, the revenue at Blue Mountain is not.
To my knowledge, there is not a similar establishment that is in fact being taxed by Blue Mountain.
Okay. And so, if we don't know what the dollar impact is, can we ask what the litigation expense would be to pursue this matter?
Well, we're doing it in-house, so there's...
I see. So there would be no outside, out-of-pocket costs?
Other than the normal filing fees, no.
Okay. And when did the county first get notice of this?
We got notice when the city of Rye sent out its tax bills, well, not the bills, but the assessment notification. I was there in front of the, meeting with the city assessor probably about 2 months ago. So it preceded that by some time before it hit my desk. I'm not sure the exact date of the notification, but we discussed it with them and explained to them why we felt it was inappropriate, but unfortunately that argument fell on deaf ears.
And has the city passed any sort of a resolution on this, or is this strictly between the county and the city assessor?
Well, the city assessment board has basically said they would assess and bill for this parcel.
The board of assessment review has the power to establish that subdivision of a lot.
They believe they do.
I'm just trying to get my head around
they,
that.
They believe they do.
In charge of this at one point many, many years ago, and it just seems so unusual to have pulled this off. All right, and you see there is no reason not to commence this, or there is an absolute reason to commence this by the 15th of October?
Yes, because if we do not commence it by the 15th, we are outside of the 30-day window that we need to fall within to challenge.
Can we challenge on an annual basis in the following year if we don't get this done?
Absolutely.
We could. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
I have Mr. Harkin, and I guess Mr. Norton after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly am one who is not a fan of suing municipalities. I don't think that's a good road for us to go down, but particularly if we don't know how much we're suing for. Can we get that information?
Absolutely.
You know, are we talking $1,000? Are we talking $20,000? You know, I'm certainly troubled by the concept of suing a municipality, and secondly, authorizing litigation when we don't know how much we're actually, what the relief we're looking for is. So, you know, those would be my 2 points, and I would certainly, you know, Legislator Williams mentioned the concept of pilots, which we use all over the county. You know, I would urge the administration to go back to the negotiation table and see if we can work something out that's amenable to both parties. But I think it's really damaging when we go down the road of suing our municipalities. And as I said, especially since we don't know the amount we're suing for. Thank you.
Yeah, I had you, Mr. Jenkins. You stepped out. But I also have Mr. Norton and Mr. Rogowski. You ready?
No, let Mr. Rogowski go.
Mr.
Norton? I should call to order the litigation subcommittee, which I apologize for being late, so I called to order that meeting. We do have a quorum because Mr. Williams is here, so, and Mr. Rogowski is here, so we have a quorum.
And you've been updated by the questions that he asked, hopefully.
I've been trying to update mine.
Sure. Just trying to understand if the lease here took into account potential taxes. Did the lease have that? Any provision for potential taxes?
Again, it is my understanding, I read lease quite a while ago, I don't have the provision in front of me. That is my understanding. I'm happy to get that provision and send it.
So does that mean that the county anticipated the fact that this...
I think it's a standard
provision. We need to see it, probably.
If I may, just follow. If the county did actually have the provision in there, then it would have been built into the rent. And if it's built into the rent, then why wouldn't the county be paying the money to the municipality if it's collecting it from the lessee?
That's I think we need the answer to that question.
All right.
But the procedural
else?
Posture is they have sent the tax bill and we grieved it.
That is correct.
And they denied the grievance, so the next step would be to take it to
court. That is absolutely correct.
Mr. Ragas.
Yes, thank you. First, unlike my good friend, the majority leader, I think if municipality is doing something to the detriment of the county, I think we have certain obligations. Mr. Burton pointed out Glen Island, this beer is served, I think, at the golf courses. I mean, if this were to go, then if you want a number, we should get the number of how many county facilities around the county are going to start paying taxes if we're this pressing to go forward. And that's a number we should have. What are the county taxpayers at risk? So that's the big picture. But let me come to the airport. The term they pay, we get a lot of taxes at the airport. It's not parkland, and I'm assuming that's the difference. It's not parkland, and there are businesses out there, and we get millions of dollars in taxes for the airport. So there is precedent for getting taxes on county land. It's not parkland. But let me go to a legal. I said litigation subcommittee is in session. Let me talk about the legality. I used to do some tax certiorari work. Tax certiorari work, really, my understanding goes to valuation, where we're attacking the valuation. And you got 30 days, you rise as a legal matter. If we were going to challenge the value they're putting it on there, this, and I'm not, I would defer to my friends, the lawyers, the real lawyers on the subcommittee. Why
You're
would this?
Real.
Well, I'm real, but I'm not. I don't practice like these guys practice. Why would we look at this as the memo from Mr. Meehan talks about? This is a removing the tax exempt status. I mean, you say effectively by taxing at least for 1 year. At least for 1 year. Why would this be an Article 78 proceeding or some other proceeding? Challenging, I would say this is a nullity. Their action is a nullity. Right. It's parkland, and if any municipality can convert parkland, unlike as opposed to the state legislature, to non-parkland, well, then we're going to tax you. That is not a value. We may be taking the wrong legal procedure. We may have 4 months to bring in Article 78, if I think that's what the limitation is, to challenge that overall determination. These people are just, you know, the assessors said, I think it's worth $30,000 or $100,000 there, and I'm going to tax. And a tax certiorari judge is going to sit there and have appraisers come in and debate valuation. I think ours is a much more fundamental issue, the removal of parkland status, if you will. And we may lose in court because we're going down the wrong road. So I would suggest maybe before we take action today that, well, you know, you're the county attorney's office, but am I way off base, or is there the legal debate to have is which is the appropriate proceeding? And my gut instinct is we may want to look at the more fundamental removing a tax exempt status, challenging the municipality's determination on that, and not debating valuations. So that'd be my contribution.
Well, to that point,
to
it depends on what Article 7 of the real property tax law allows you to do. Does it allow you to sue on the basis not on value, but also on whether a property can be taxed or subject to an exemption?
I raised that question.
The exemptions are always, most of these challenges you see, they occur also with a lot of churches or non-for-profits who have been off, who are challenging because the assessor has put them onto the tax roll, and they're saying we are exempt, and they have to go through the same process.
So the issue of the exemption,
right,
is before the court the same 30 days as
right.
well as the assessor.
The same, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Jenks.
I tried.
I like your approach, Mr. Jackson, right? to suggest that. So we're still going to wait and find out how much the assessment is. So, I mean, maybe someone...
No, what tax bill?
How much the tax bill is.
Right.
So we understand how much we're talking about. The county attorney, and thank you, the first deputy is going to go and make sure there's language in the current contractual
Absolutely.
With... it's not called the TE bar, it's something else as far as their official name. The question that I have is... In the process for doing the grievance in the beginning, was there authority issued or request from the board to challenge that through the process? I mean, would that be a legal proceeding as this is now, where we're going to do a certiorari where we would challenge, the county attorney's office would file to challenge the assessment made by RIE? Did that come to the board?
The short answer is no. That is not bringing a legal proceeding. This would, in fact, be bringing a legal proceeding. What we were doing was participating in the hearing, offering our opinions, and then after that concluded, the board rendered its opinion that it was, in fact, a taxable parcel. So that was not commencing any proceeding as we are asking to do today.
Understood. So just in general, just from a general perspective, if the county attorney's office is participating in something like this, where we could end up in a legal position, the concern was that the board just didn't know about this. And quite frankly, in the memo that came from Mr. Meehan, it said that basically we're all in a short time frame, which is why we put it on the agenda today to have the discussion that we almost all didn't know. And I think that from a litigation subcommittee perspective, at least that should have been something, Mr. Chairman Nona and Chairman Alvarado, that should have at least been something aware of, so that we would understand the potentials of a case getting to where we are now, which is precedent setting as far as I can see. Do we have any other cases in Westchester County that you're aware of, Ms. Cacciabianco, where the county has had its tax status exemption removed from a county property?
No.
Right. So, I mean, that's one of the big issues in this particular thing, but I would be absolutely more comfortable waiting. You know, we certainly could keep our meeting open, Mr. Chairman, before we decide whatever we're going to do with this particular matter. One, understanding how much money we're talking about, talking about the options that are on the table. If we don't take action now, Mr. Cacciabianco, what happens?
If we do not take action now and there is no vote of the full board to authorize that action, then we do not commence that action by the 15th. Then we lose our opportunity to challenge.
Until next year.
Until next year.
And that gets back to the point of Mr. Rogowski's option.
I got a question about that.
Sure.
Do we lose it forever? Because it's not a question of the value. It's a question of whether it's subject to an exemption. Once you lose the right to challenge, if you fail to challenge the denial of the exemption, isn't that res judicata? You can raise. You don't have any. There's no different argument. It's not like the value is possibly changed from year to year. It's the same issue, and you failed to exercise your right to challenge it. I'm not sure of that, but you know what? But you may be precluded.
I know there are two ways of which you can get it removed even after. One, you can challenge it on an annual basis. Secondly, you can have the state pass a minor bill that removes it off.
I mean, it's a home rule request.
Yes, that's a home rule request.
All right, Mr. Chairman, if this board needs to act, I'm committed to having a special meeting of this committee, and I'm pretty sure you would be committed to have a board action if necessary.
Okay.
But I think there are too many intangibles here for us to move forward with this item at this moment. And in the interest of time, I would stop the discussion at this point.
That's
our next Monday. We still have time.
Could we have the item sent to us? I think you have the notes of the item.
Yes.
Like, okay. Great, thanks.
Is there a draft complaint yet?
Draft complaint also.
There is one that is in early draft.
We can get a copy whenever you get it.
All right, and those items are being requested, Mr.
Yes.
Casablanco. Bernice.
I just want to know from anybody, okay, that can answer, if all of the golf courses, which is on parks land, all over the city, if this sets a precedent, do we get taxes from all of them? Does it say so in parks land somewhere in the state that you're allowed? Or you're not allowed? I mean, all of a sudden, all of this, came about. And I'm just curious. I mean, because there are plenty of our golf courses who have beer, liquor licenses. They come off from playing and all that. Does that give us the right to collect taxes from them? Is it written somewhere past or...
That's the exact issue, and that's why this is a once in a lifetime type of a thing, and it's that delicate. So you're on to good question, Bernice, and that's why this item is that important, because it would set a lot of precedent. So
okay.
we seriously looked into whatever other information we can come to within the next week or two and decide the course of action.
Absolutely, today the question is not whether we would collect taxes. There are leases with each of these establishments. It's a question as to whether each of the local municipalities would then have the opportunity to levy taxes against each of those entities that are operating on parkland through leases with the county.
Yes,
that's
what. Yes, Mr. Burns.
Is the arrangement with a tiki bar a license or is it a lease?
I'm not sure. I would have to
5 years.
That's a good question.
I think it's a license.
Okay, could you get us that information
too
when you come back with the information on the impact of the tax? Thank you.
I will be set.
All right. Any other calls and comments?
Do you see any issue about an argument being made that we have alienated parkland without getting proper authority?
Not at all. I think that, as I said earlier, this has been and continues to be part of the functioning of that park. just as the other entities we're talking about.
As a potential argument that could be made. I just think, you know, if you guys thought that through, I mean, that might be something that we may need to think through.
And I have a final statement from my vice chairman of this committee.
Yes, thank you, Jim. Just from the real estate perspective, understand it's all very nice to look today, and Mr. Williams raised a good point. What's in the lease today? Oh, the tiki bar would pay, the golf course concession would pay. The first year, once they're for renegotiate, they sit down, it's all gone, at the end of the day, the county, not our vendors, the county will end up, if this were to go ahead. Mm. So don't feel comfortable, oh good, the lessee is gonna pay this. Only until they say, well, that's everything I'm closing down, the next person you put in there, the county will pay these taxes. You're not gonna pawn it off onto the lessee. It doesn't matter what the lease says, because no one, it's a good point. I'm sure no one ever anticipated. It's general language, you put it in there, but I'm sure the rents weren't set up that way because it wasn't gonna happen. If it does happen, I can guarantee you, as you go into the future, the rent will come down next to nothing because it will be deemed part of the rent, and I'm not paying it to the county, I'm paying it to the locality. So we will take a hit at the end of the day. Golf courses, Glen Island, this will be a big hit to the county. Don't let the lease fool you.
And can we get this also from budget, because I see Director Sewell as well, how much revenue we generate is generated to the county from the T-Bar, because that will also go into that calculation that says, all right, the assessment is X, or the taxes we would pay is X, and how much we bring in is Y, and that's when we may have a determination that we might decide that that's not in the best interest of the county to continue with that number, as Vice Chairman Magowski just referred to.
All right, so the request has been made. I'll get that. Thank you. Mr. Castromanco, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
We'll stay tuned if we need to revisit this next week.
All right, I'll try and get that information to the committee members as quickly as possible.
All right, thanks, Jim.
I'd like to adjourn the litigation subcommittee.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor, aye. Opposed.
Thank you to the subcommittee for meeting jointly with us. This was unusual, but it is the right item. But this is a serious president's issue, as noted by all the members. So thank you so much, Mr. Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hereby call the Committee of Housing Planning and Operations to order. I note the presence of a quorum. We have a series of matters to be discussed, and the first matter is that of the lease with Erstadt Biddle and the Westchester Community College. Those are items 2 and 3, numbers 4658, 4659. We have suddenly this man is here. Thank you very much. Do you have to bring anybody else with you?
I'm sure. You got room?
Karen Ramos of the County Attorney's Office.
Thank you very much. I was unavoidably absent at the previous discussion of this matter, and as I recall from the follow-up on this that there was some concern as to whether the lease extension, which has a rather high percentage increase. Now, it so happens that this project is in my community, and we are very glad to have it there. The amount, as I recall, was something in the range of $12 a square foot, and is going up into the $15, $16, $17 range. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the rent was set at $12 for the past 5 years. So it's a 2006 rent that was extended for 5 years.
We're getting feedback from somewhere.
Jim.
He's right there.
Say it again so we can look here for the feedback.
The way the lease had been structured was every 5 years an increase. So the rent of $12 a square foot became effective in 2006 and carried through for the next 5 years. The amended lease would carry through the same structure. So it would start at 15 and then go up to $17 and change in 5 years.
5 years from this year.
From this year.
So it would be in 16, it would go to $17 a foot.
Right.
Under the economic circumstances we have today, do we want to sit tight for that kind of an increase?
The client college, we checked competitively at certain points in time. The college had done some research on comparative rents for space, it was a former distribution center, in a retail complex before high, and I think even Pat DiImperio, who then joined WCC, got involved. And the rent they were being offered was competitive. When we got involved, when I got involved through DPW, we went out and did another check, and we were under market for the kind of space we had. We checked again as recently as last week, because the concern had come up with this committee, and we're still under the comparative rent for that kind of space in this market. So we did not feel that the base rent was an issue, and it's being held for a five-year period. The client slash college's main concern was future liability for HVAC units and the need to have improvements provided for as landlords work with the renewal. And the first lease offer they received from Erstock Biddle was a renewal with no landlord contribution to improvements, and where they were most intractable was no responsibility for HVACs. So that was the those were the two critical issues in subsequent negotiation. The initial offer on landlord improvements was flat $15,000, which we rejected as inadequate for a 10-year lease with this quality tenant. And then we spent a lot of time going back and forth. I worked very closely with Nicole Josephs, who's the director of the Extension Center in Ossining, and providing maintenance bills. She went through it exhaustively. I went up there. We exhaustively went through the center and looked at what improvements were necessary, priced out, et cetera. So the way we finally succeeded in getting what they needed covered was to give a precise list with firm estimates of what the work would cost, and the college needs to be responsible for those. With respect to the HVAC, that was the biggest pill for them to swallow, because it was something they'd taken a firm line on in the original lease. So it was concession from the original lease where all HVAC responsibility had been that of the college. And in that context, the college has been hit with a $50,000 replacement of a large HVAC unit. They had three more HVAC units, albeit smaller, and they didn't want that kind of an event to happen again. So the toughest part of the negotiation was getting Erstock Biddle to agree to be responsible for the replacement of those units. So,
and that has in fact happened.
And that has happened. So from the standpoint of the client, at no point did the client indicate an interest in moving. The place worked, and which was never communicated to the landlord. they believed, and you know, and I was pressing, we can't ever appear to not have alternatives. But at the end of the day, you know, within this room and within the conversations with us and WCC, the space worked very well for the college. It worked. It allowed them to expand their programs in the college. The shopping center venue worked for them. The parking was very adequate. So they were very, very happy. They just wanted to limit financial exposure on making necessary improvements and on the HVAC going bad. And so we got, and it took them several months, which I concede, but I found that over the passage of time, there was a slow incremental willingness to make concessions on the part of the landlord. So at the end of the day, the WCC, Pat DiImperio, and Nicole Josephs felt that we had gotten what they wanted in order to stay there for 10 years.
The concessions besides the HVAC pickup by the landlord consist of what?
They would pay for it. They, Nicole Josephs had prepared a list of improvements that she needed, and they're an appendix to the lease amendment, which you have. And she priced them out. It comes to $31,000 and change. One of them, the signage, was not the biggest item financially, but they wanted better signage within the context of the shopping mall. And they wanted the signage to reflect the new logo of WCC. And again, for, I think, precedent reasons, that was a tough issue for the landlord, but they agreed to do that as well. So we were very careful to make sure the signage improvements were included in the work, which is going to be part of the landlord's work.
In exchange for which, we're going up $3 a square foot.
For 5 years.
From 12 to 15 for 5 years, and then two more at an option, is that right?
Then in 5 years we go to 17.
It's a 10-year lease. Up three and then up two for to a total of 17.
That's correct, 17 and change.
Okay, I'll exhaust my questions. Any members of the committee? Mr. Bergowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions, and, you know, first, and I know, you know, the administration made changes, obviously, a year and a half ago, but, you know, this, on a 10-year lease between the college and whoever was in charge on the ninth floor, should have been looking at this a year, you know, after the ninth year of the lease, started looking at this. But that's, you know, that's history. What we don't have, we have the rent, but we don't have the full amount that it's actually the college is going to pay. And really, we're concerned because we obviously give money to the college, so, you know, it's not just a college issue. The taxes and the CAM charges, they're paying their share, and so I think the committee, we all need to know, in addition to the $188,000 per year, what are the other dollars that the college will be paying. That's one item. When you say, and I would agree with you, Mary, that if you go into the retail, you know, first, big picture, the rents were higher 5 years ago than they are today. So to Mr. Burton's first question, you know, when you go from 2006, I think it's fair to say, because I see this every day, that in fact, tenants are asking for rent reductions from 2006. Now, maybe we had a good deal in 2006. You say for that kind of space, you're talking, there are very few, I think, so in Westchester, distribution warehouse type space in retail centers. When you said very specifically for that kind of space, when you're checking retail rents, I would agree, maybe even at $15 a foot in Ossining, that may be a good rent for retail. But we're really, we went through the Cross County Shopping Center a couple of years ago. We don't really need to be competing for retail space. We need to be looking for different kind of space with parking. Parking is a key thing. But anyway, so just to the valuations, we don't necessarily need to be in retail space, which gets me to the two big issues. And first, it's incorrect, as I read the extension of the lease, and I must say, the letter, the transmittal letter from the county executive, I think came from him, and what you just said now, what I read in the lease is that there's a 25-ton unit, which the tenant will continue to be obligated to repair, maintain, service, and replace. Could you address that 25-ton unit and why you seem to...
The three smaller units.
The three smaller units we have to repair and maintain, but the landlord will replace. That was your testimony.
Maintenance obligation.
Yes.
And if they fail to...
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about what you did not say, and what the transmittal letter did not say, but only upon reading a lease extension, tenants shall remain obligated to repair, maintain, service, and replace the HVAC units, including but not limited to the 25-ton HVAC unit, also serve the demise premises, which I can tell you was expensive, because I just tell you, 25-ton unit to repair, to replace, is expensive. So again, the testimony was not accurate. The transmission to this committee.
That the new one is not part of the agreement to replace. The one that the college replaced is about a year old. And that's not under the replacement obligation.
Right, so under the prior lease, the college had to, you're telling me now, the college had to put a 25-ton unit on the landlord's building. So nine years into the lease, the college installed at its cost a 25-ton unit, not even knowing that it was going to have a new lease. I mean, that's another one. You should have started renegotiating the lease when that issue came up.
Regrettably, I wasn't here.
I know, well, it's a year, so was in the ninth year of the lease this happened, or when did this happen?
8.5, 9 years. It was the largest unit. They replaced it. They paid $50,000. There are three smaller units. The agreement to replace is not with respect to the brand new unit that the college replaced. It's with respect to the three small units that the college has not replaced.
I'm sorry.
I understand.
When did they replace the unit?
But under the old lease, the college was responsible for replacing. So the college replaced a 25-ton unit on the landlord's building without negotiating a lease at that time. That was the first mistake. But now, so you're saying, I mean, one might argue there's presumably a five-year lease warranty on that new unit since it was done a year and a half. Maybe there's 3 years left.
The past 2 years there, that machine. I don't have the...
Okay, so let's say there's 3 years. But that for the next 10 years, if that unit, something goes wrong with it... That's a good point to negotiate. That should have been negotiated once the warranty is up, because it's very easy if a landlord says, "Oh yeah, we'll take care of the 2-ton unit, the 5-ton unit. You take care of the 25-ton unit, which is a lot more money." I don't mean to get too detailed with you, but this is like a negotiated real estate deal. So that's another issue. But the most important issue, it seems to me, and Mr. Burton kind of alluded to it unintentionally, is options. Why? Because I still think once we see the taxes and the CAM charges, and look at the total number. in this market and these interest rates, that it's certainly possible. I'm not saying probable, but possible that the college with the county's assistance can look around somewhere in the Ossining area that want to be certainly in that service area, take a look and see what's on there, because for us to pay $200,000 a year on a mortgage at 2 or 3%, you can get a lot for that. You can fit up costs and everything else. So at a minimum, seems to me you should negotiate a five-year lease with the second five as an option. So during the next 5 years, the next 2 or 3 years, the college will be looking around, and maybe the landlord will be, you know, it's great to have a AAA tenant for 10 years. This is fantastic. I would have offered a five-year lease and then a five-year option at these rents maybe. And then it gives the college and the county some flexibility to say what's going on in the marketplace. Interest rates are staying low. Yeah, hopefully the college is going to stay there for the next 50 years now that you've established and you're there. And just to see the numbers, let this board see the numbers and compare. Full cost, rent, taxes, insurance, CAM charges, some of which the college would have to pay anyway, to possibly buying something and renting. So 10 years locks us in for 10 years, we're done. So I don't know why you didn't. The landlord at the end of the day, in my opinion, would have done, because you still have, and 5 years for us is better than 10 years. Because we have the option, and I'm very disappointed. I want to say whether you should go back, and that until, you know, we're sad, you can't get that, because you're there month to month now. Frankly, the landlord will let you stay there another 2 years month to month, because what's the landlord going to do? So, frankly, in my opinion, you got plenty of time to go out and take a look now. You always like to have it in writing, but I can't imagine. I don't take responsibility the landlord bringing an action against you, theoretically possible. But Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the take another look in the Ossining area. And see what's out there and compare apples to apples. But that's, you know, it's in my opinion.
Any other members? Mr. Williams.
Yeah, just two questions quickly. Erstat Biddle is a Maryland corporation. Does anyone check to see whether that's qualified to do business in New York?
I can address Erstat Biddle. I mean, I actually.
They operate in
Westchester. Westchester, Fairfield County. All their properties in Westchester and Fairfield County.
I understand that. My question is it qualified to business in New York? I mean,
it's a public company. It's a public company.
Yes or no?
Well, they're doing a lot of it. Are they authorized? I don't know. But they do all their work. All their work is in New York. Are they authorized? I don't know. But all their work's in New York.
That was a yes or no answer. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I just want to say the attorney who worked on this is out of the office today, so I'm here.
Okay.
I'm guessing that he would have checked. I can confirm it.
Thank you. The second thing, Legislator Rogowski mentioned the word taxes, which we just discussed on the other end of this. In these rents, were any taxes built into the cost in terms of coming up to with the monthly rent? In other words, is there a tax factor included in the rental?
I think it's a base rent as the offer letter came through, and then continuing the percentage of area, the taxes are based on, I think our piece of that footprint is 43%, and it's direct pass-through of operating taxes.
Right. So in that, there is no claim that we are using this that we have some kind of exemption because we are a non-taxable entity, and therefore that pass-through should not be coming through to us.
No, we pay 43% of the taxes. It's the rent, because it's a privately owned, we're paying taxes.
I understand.
I asked for that number. I'm just trying to make a point on that.
Yeah, the point is that it goes both ways. We are the lessee here. Mm. We were the lessor in the other situation. And what you're saying is that as the lessee, the fact that we are a governmental entity, and we are, if we had owned this building, it would have been tax exempt. You're saying that there is something that distinguishes us because it's a rental arrangement? It says that we cannot get the same exemption if we're using the entire space of this building.
We're not using the entire space.
Okay, well, we're substantially occupying the space, I would imagine.
Substantially.
Right.
We share it with Wall Hour store.
Okay.
And a party store.
43%.
Right. Is there any authority for that for saying that some or other we are not eligible for an exemption?
That would be, I think, a legal question.
I'd have to look. I'm sorry, I don't know enough about this.
My experience is that when a governmental entity is renting in a privately owned building, you pay your share of taxes.
Okay, but we've seen this from the other side, and I'd like to get the full picture. If you can just get us.
Okay.
Yeah.
other members of the committee. Yeah.
Interesting parallels. Yeah. Interesting parallels. Yeah. Parallels. Interesting.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you very much. First, raise your hand.
He's
our brother.
All right.
Mr. Jenkins, we've given you a hard enough time today. Go ahead.
Thank you. It's starting early today. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We'll continue this tomorrow.
I just wanted to echo what Mr. Gauss was saying. Currently in the real estate market, in our experience with the college, and I'm not sure we got a date on when they actually did the HVAC over. If it was a year and a half, it may have just been at the beginning.
It's in my records upstairs. I'm assuming it was
in the beginning of 2010. However, the issue for us as a whole is that our experience with the community college and negotiation leases is that they're really great educators, right? And they do a fantastic job of that. And what we've had the experience to say that as far as negotiating leases and all those terms and conditions, especially the ones that Mr. Rogowski brought up, it may be better for us to take, you know, a fresh look. You know, your staff and your folks taking a better look at it, because we have been able in the past to save not thousands of dollars, but millions of dollars from their negotiations, because they're just not real estate people. That's not their job, right? Again, they're really great educators, and they do a great job and fantastic job. And you know, Dr. Hankin and the whole staff do great work. But as far as real estate is concerned, we'd rather leave that with the professionals here in the administration, as well as you know the many real estate folks that we have around the table. So, Mr. Chairman, what I would recommend, if it would be in order to do, is that we're just placing this on hold until we get this, you know, the additional information to come back, and understanding that, you know, Mr. Gauss's suggestion about a 5-year as opposed to a 10-year may be the better thing in the best interest of the county, and to be able to keep that level of pressure on for a landlord with a AAA tenant that's been there. How long has Mr. Taylor been there?
9 years.
It's been at least 8 years and probably 9 or 10.
Right, so we've been there for 9 years. It's not like we're gonna, we're gonna run away or something like that, but we certainly should have the opportunity to get the best deal for the Westchester taxpayers. Yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Mann, is there any indication that this is a time-sensitive matter?
Well, we're on holdover status right now. Again, when I came in and when Mr. D'Imperio came in, it had started late again. I don't want to keep saying before I got here. But the unwillingness to make any concessions in the early negotiation, you know, slowed it down. So we spoke to the landlord and said, look, we are negotiating, but we can't agree to what you're offering. And it was agreed that we could just stay in place on a holdover basis, so we got closer on terms, which is what we did.
And the holdover, which runs from January 1, 11 to the term of the new lease runs from January 1, 11 to 12/31/15.
Yes.
So any holdover will be paid for eventually at the new rental.
That's correct.
Okay. I think it's appropriate for us to gather some more information here. So I'm going to table this for the moment.
Yes, and I'll do the same. But please, going back to what Mr. Rogowski brought up, the 50-ton HVAC unit should be mentioned somewhere and negotiated, because this unit is going to, if the timing is correct, it's going to be out of maintenance agreements or warranty or so on and so forth. That one is the one that keeps
it
going.
When I come back, I'll come back with information on the warranty on the 50-ton unit. The maintenance, maintaining the contract with the HVAC, you know, maintainer, you know, service technicians, in the negotiation, that was going to stay with the college. I don't think the college felt that they had any exposure on the new unit. But I don't have the warranty information here to share with you. I will get that. They felt they had significant exposure on the 3 smaller units, and that's where they wanted to cover that exposure, which we did.
The draft of the renewal is cut off. It appears to have been on 8.5 by 14 page.
Okay.
And so I'm not altogether sure what happened to paragraph 9 in the beginning of some other stuff. So if we could actually a full copy of that or a reprinted out one, I think that would be appropriate for us to have as well.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Then we'll move on. We've skipped item. Well, we've been laid over numbers 2 and 3.
I have a full copy. If staff would like to copy this now.
How did you get it? I did.
Well, you know.
I got yours.
It's too
right.
long.
Thank you. We'll get that. The ERSAT Biddle, Westchester Community College item is put over. All right, we'll move on then to the property conveyance of 3372 Old Crompond Road in Yorktown and associated items. I see Ms. Drummond is here. It's always well worth our while to have the planning department here to talk to us. Ms. Drummond, I was a little bit concerned that we hadn't gotten the executive summary, but our crack staff has just delivered it. Members, if you check the new material that Debbie gave us, you should have with you the executive summary for 3372 Old Crompond Road. This will, of course, form the basis of our discussions as we go forward. For the record, please, if you could introduce yourself and your staff, Deputy Commissioner.
Sure. Norma Drummond, Deputy Commissioner of the Planning Department. I have with me Deb DeLong, the Housing Director, and Larry Kelly, who's one of our housing specialists.
And Ms. Mann continues with us in another capacity.
Special
can't keep her away.
I'm the executive for housing.
Thank you. Okay, if you'd present your work here.
You have before you a legislative package that includes three acts related to the county's acquisition and subsequent conveyance of 26 affirmatively furthering fair housing units in the town of Yorktown. The three acts relate to, one, the actual acquisition and subsequent conveyance of property, two, the bonds associated with the purchase of that property, and the third is bonds associated with the infrastructure also related to this housing development. Crompond Crossing is a 26-unit, three-bedroom, all three-bedroom complex up in the town of Yorktown off of Route 202. It is, if anybody's familiar with the area, if you're familiar with the BJ Shopping Center, it is literally just kind of like a parcel removed from Route 202.
Grandma.
So, Grandma's Pie, the restaurant is it's down the road, yes, right. Exactly. So that is the area. It is very close to the Taconic Parkway. It is, the rear of the site has the Bear Mountain Parkway extension on it. So it is a property that's very well suited for transportation, for employment opportunities. There is a bus line that runs on Route 202, etc.
So this is north of 202, not south.
This
of 202.
Is south. This is north.
North
exactly.
Of 202.
Yes.
Yeah, Bill, these photos at the end there, I think, give us a pretty good clear for those of us who travel around rather regularly. Go ahead.
All right, so these are three-bedroom units. Unfortunately, that means that they will be a little bit more expensive. This is property in the sewer district, so you do not have to worry about infrastructures related to any sewers, except for bringing the lines into the site. We are proposing that these units would sell for between $221,000 and $234,000, recognizing that the exterior, the outside units in each of the buildings would be a little bit more desirable. So it gets us a little bit more of sales revenue to be able to bring down the county subsidy. Larry, if you don't mind, take us through let me one more thing for me to cover. The actual acquisition itself is $1,430,000. We did just have an appraisal update done on this property, and the property was valued at $1.6 million. We have a whole bunch of appraisals going on right now. So. The site work is probably the more expensive part of this. We don't often see site work at $57,000 per unit, but there is a lot of roadway to get this in, a lot of extension of pipes to get the infrastructure into the site. Again, in 26 units, and it is providing 58 parking spaces. So, Larry, can you take us through it now?
26 units and three bedrooms. They're all going to be approximately 1,350 square feet, three bedrooms, two and a half baths. These would be pretty simple acquisitions. They're going to be in two different types of buildings, one six-unit, one four-unit. They're going to look very much like this. It's a very warm and appropriate appearance for these buildings. And I just wanted to show you, if I could flip this over, I hope you can see this back there. This is the site. The entire site is approximately eight acres. The site that we're going to acquire is the rear portion of this site, which is a little over 5 acres, it's about 5¾ acres. There's going to be in the future some commercial properties in the front. The acquisition from, I'm sorry, the entryway from Old Crompond Road will go through the commercial site and then into the residential site back here. As you can see, there are several buildings, four unit, six unit buildings. There's a good amount of drainage work that's needing to be done. There's a good amount of earth that needs to be moved. Paving, landscaping, drainage, the typical kinds of things that we normally see, lighting, curbing, that will account for the infrastructure investment in this property. There's still a good amount of green space on the site. As Norma had said, pretty much right across the street here is Route 20235 along that very, very accessible corridor. There's shopping nearby, hospitals, maybe about a mile and a half down the road, and certainly 2 miles maybe?
Two.
Okay. And certainly easy access to the parkways, which are literally up here behind the site. Any questions?
Let's talk about the sewage. Into what district will the sewage flow?
This is in the Peekskill district.
I'm sorry?
It's in the Peekskill district.
It's in the Peekskill sewage district. Okay. Has this all been negotiated out between Yorktown and Peekskill, or are we doing this, or is the town of Yorktown just doing this as of right because the line is there?
It's been in the district since 2002.
Okay.
The parcel's been in we're not adding the site to the district.
Okay. So that's clear enough. Originally, this was proposed as the previous owner was proposed as a senior facility, was it not?
Correct.
How did we get the three bedrooms?
Because frankly, the county executive's office hosted a meeting with the town and discussed recognizing that the town was interested in senior housing, but again, in light of the stipulation, we encouraged the town to consider two family units instead, with an accessory apartment for the senior. And the town was a little concerned that might add a little too much density to the site. And so instead, the town agreed that they would drop the senior restriction and would, you know, consider this to be family housing.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, that the community made that decision.
Yep.
Wow. It's a busy street right there. The Bear Mountain Parkway coming in, or the Bear Mountain exit coming into 202 right there. Grandma's down the street, which apparently Legislator Jenkins attends on a regular basis. Probably therefore worth at least 5% of the traffic flow, and some of the rest of us being unable to use Grandma's anymore. It's a very busy road. I'm assuming that both the town and the state has approved this as a developable parcel with the additional traffic that's going to be added, and the curb cut in particular.
Correct. This has final site plan approval from the town of Yorktown, which did all of its appropriate reviews related to being able to, they did findings on this one, right? Yes. So they were able to do findings, a finding statement that addressed any of the environmental impacts and the associated mitigation to address them.
And so we have, within the town's set of approvals, is any state approvals that were necessary as well?
Correct.
Okay. Tie up the package.
Yep. And okay. We have AHC approval, so we have the state financing approval in place as well. Mm-hmm. New York State approved that back in July.
Okay. Comments by members. Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things. On the site plan, Larry, that you had before, we usually call him legend, but you know, Larry behind the future view, if you will, with the shopping centers up front, for a transportation perspective, is the expectation, well, I would expect that we're not going to have transportation going from the front of Old Crompton Road, which I guess is 202, back to the site. Does the site plan include the walkways? And I think that's what that the Chairman Burton was referring to, like walkways to get from 202 back that are accessible, you know, with the curb cuts and, you know, wide enough for wheelchair access and all that kind of stuff to go from the front to the, yeah.
From the front to the back, you know what, I can't answer that. I don't know if it's on the site.
Yes.
I would imagine, yes.
Okay. We do actually have the project manager for the developer, Neil DeLuca, is here, so he can answer any additional questions that we can.
Okay. And we always welcome the deputy county executive, deputy county executive, so we don't want to miss that point.
DeLuca, if you would actually join us at the table, that would be very helpful, I think.
All right, the second thing is really on the financing. We actually had this similar discussion with the Newcastle site that we just did last week, where we have $131,000 of dollars that are potentially being used if we subtract the $20,000 rounding, by the way, just in 19231, to say it's $111,000 out of the Fair and Affordable Housing Fund. But none of that has to do with two bedrooms, three bedrooms, one bedroom, et cetera. This is acquisition and site work. So one of the things that I can, I keep wanting to echo, especially when we talk about the three bedroom units or not two, three, two, one, it doesn't matter. You know, we're paying for acquisition and site work.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with the number of bedrooms that are in the unit. I just had to throw that side note in. But the question again I have is that when we do something, and we're making this decision to invest $131,923 on what seems to be an outstanding development, worked through with the town, we might need to make a modification. Instead of using $1.5 million out of Fair and Affordable Housing Fund, we may need to use money outside of that for from our regular HIF type monies, right, our housing infrastructure monies, and that should be a decision and talked about as well. Because again, we've been very concerned about the burn rate. We've had discussions and press conferences about the burn rate.
I'm hoping that we're going to have a discussion tomorrow at HBO's regular meeting on the burn rate. Are we on track for that?
Yeah, but because again, I mean, when we get these at this point in time, it's we want to wrap it up and move forward. But this kind of dollars, if we're investing at this level because it's necessary in the community and all of us feel strongly about that and want to move forward on that, and we get 12 people to adopt this, then we need to be really considering strongly that we need to have additional changes of investments. Because if not, we're just going to be burning through dollars.
Sources of investment.
And whether, again, if that's HIF, and we're making a commitment from Westchester County, and that's county, both floors, right, that says we're going to make this $1.5 million investment on site work, as you indicated, it's not the normal number, right? It's
correct. This is higher.
This is much higher than normal. Again, we can't push back on our requirements from the stipulation agreement and say, well, this is higher, but we're making this choice. I wouldn't, I'm fully supportive of this project, and I think that altogether we need to have that level of discussion to say we need to continue this investment at a level, and both sides need to be alert to make that assessment to say that we're spending at a much higher rate for good reason. Right? And there's not, no one saying it's a bad reason, but for good reason. But we need to say that that's not part of the stipulation agreement. That's the county making an investment in something that we think makes sense. Right. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we did that with the other project, and we're working on the, that was only $400,000, but it's the same issue.
Mr. Hart.
Thanks. I just wanted to add a point to put back in the back of people's minds. We don't have to discuss it today, but with the enhanced MS4s, we can anticipate higher site costs in a lot of our projects moving forward. And then within the Croton watershed, which Yorktown obviously is, there are even further enhanced stormwater requirements. So, I think we need to get used to the notion that what used to work isn't necessarily going to work in terms of runoff and phosphorus and all those kind of things. So just put that in the back of people's minds.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, and Mr. Jenkins, I think it was good that he brought this up because it allows us to kind of put back into context the county and how it's performed in this area and what really the track record has been, say, over the last maybe 9 years. And, of course, Norma and Deborah know better than anyone that we have a long history. Certainly 7 years prior to our entering into this seven-year period of where we have 7 years to comply with the settlement, the 7 years prior to that, was a period of time where we, as a matter of public policy, made substantial investment into housing and financed it in the way in which we thought prudent. Much of that investment was bonded. And of course, it represented this county's commitment to helping to create housing here in Westchester for its residents. So so put into that context, none of this should be new to anyone. We have always been a very high performer when it came to helping to create affordable housing for our residents. And this just represents a reminder to everyone that as we move forward, that same commitment, you know, is there. Whether there was a settlement or not, we still had that commitment as a matter of public policy to help create affordable housing, and we do have sources of investment to rely upon.
Okay, Mr. Rogowski.
Yeah, just a quick statement, Mr. Chairman, because I will not be able to attend your meeting tomorrow afternoon. You'll be happy to know.
Marty will miss you desperately.
But just a quick comment, if I may. I just want to put on the record, I think, to Chairman Jenkins, we should be careful about rewriting history. We spend hours and hours discussing this very point about the burn rate, the 51.7, because there are other communities that are not involved in stipulation, and there's a whole debate of if there are extra dollars available. To Mr. Ryan's point, this county's done a lot of work. If there are dollars available, there are several other communities that are sort of waiting around, potentially hoping, looking for the good county help. And so before we just very quickly say, well, the 51.7, if we need more, how about the federal government? Great housing. I love the project, and it's so good. How about the federal government raising maybe some of their subsidies? How about the state raising some? We debated for hours and hours, and when 51.7, some members, we made the decisions that it wasn't an open checkbook. 51.7, that's the number. Great, let's go do it. So before we kind of be a little expansive on the pocketbook, other communities like Port Chester and Mount Vernon are maybe waiting for those dollars that we'd like to spend on affordable housing. So let's just, because I can't say this tomorrow, so I said it today.
Duly noted, thank you. Any other members? Mr. Williams.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what Legislator Rogowski just said in terms of the cost. Just to repeat, the cost per unit is $131,000. That's what's costing the county to build this housing. Let me ask you, on average, what does it cost on average over for us to build housing of the similar similar type housing? Let's say in non-stipulation districts.
In
non-stipulation.
Non-eligible.
Non-eligible, right?
Significantly less. This is $55,000 per unit just for land acquisition. In a more urban area, land acquisition would be much closer to $30,000 per unit. Okay, infrastructure here, again, because it, you know, it is a three-bedroom, so there are additional parking spaces required, so there is some additional infrastructure required here. But at $57,000 per unit, generally our infrastructure is somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 per unit. So there definitely are additional costs associated with this, because it is in an ineligible community.
Yeah, and I understand that, but I don't think it's per se have to be. And I just want to make sure that the county, these are three-bedroom units,
right? Correct.
Constructing the three-bedroom units, this was not forced upon the county to do this by HUD or anyone else. This was a voluntary project that we decided we want to do as a county.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Right, in that there is no, I know there is a discussion about, well, it's impossible to do three-bedroom units, and it's worth blowing up the entire stipulation for, because it is such an anathema to what we agree with. But here we have these three-bedroom units, where the cost of it, we are fine with, we're doing this voluntarily, which suggests that there, not to say that we should be all doing three-bedroom units, because I think, I agree, that would be probably too very, very expensive. But it shows that we can do them, that it's possible to do it, and it's possible for us to be able to do that if we're doing it voluntarily, without a gun to our head telling us that we've got to do this. I am concerned, I want to express, in every housing that comes through, and it has no that doesn't have any bearing on the developer or the housing, because I don't have any objections personally to the projects. I have a fundamental objection, though, and I'm going to continue to state it on the record every single opportunity I have. I have a fundamental objection to the county's policy that says that we are not going to fund housing in certain areas, such as those that are not eligible communities, even though those housing might have started before we even got into the stipulation. It might even start and were approved by the Board of Legislators and this county. I believe that that policy, first of all, is a divisive policy that divides part of this county between stipulation and non-stipulation districts. I think what it does is then decides that it's not going to invest in certain communities who are taxpayers like everyone else. And these monies that we invest are monies that come from throughout the county of Westchester. This doesn't come from anywhere. And I am supportive of housing to be constructed anywhere in the county of Westchester. I'm opposed to any policy that implicitly discriminates against communities and use the stipulation as a pretext for it, because the stipulation itself does not provide for that. I just want to state that, because I think that that is bad policy. I don't think this board, all members of this board, I've never articulated any kind of position in that way.
And that's why it's not a county policy, by the way.
Well, I'm just saying that if what is being executed is purportedly a policy, but I know that I haven't heard any member of this board, as long as I've been here, have actually said this is what we agree should be done in terms of the various communities. We represent Westchester County, different districts, but we understand also that we have to look at the county as a whole, and we do not try to cut one side against the other. All of us vote on projects, regardless of where we live, that goes across the lines to different districts. I just wanted to put that on the record, because I will continue to do that at every opportunity I have with respect to these housing projects, these housing buildings. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Mr. Williams is right to do that. I think that it's important, once again, to go back to something that I think is very fundamental to our structure here, our government structure in Westchester, that is co-equal, separate branch of government. We are the legislature. We establish policy in this county. Once again, if you could snap your fingers and there was no suit and there was no settlement and there was no federal funding, we reached a crossroads, so to speak, years ago, when the whole issue of inadequate housing, insufficient housing for our residents, was front and center on these tables, and our committees discussed the great need of people here in Westchester County. We decided that the county could flex considerable economic muscle and get involved with the assisting the creation of affordable housing for our residents. At the time, we had long, lengthy debates, and we realized that here in Westchester County, it was the very expensive land costs component of the price that you would need to pay to put a unit of housing out on the marketplace. And we decided that we could assist by either reducing or taking that very expensive element of the equation out. And we did that through the development of our New Homes Land Acquisition Program. And we knew that the source of funds, after we made decisions as to how we would participate, to the extent that we would participate, we made a decision that there was a source of funds at our disposal. We have excellent credit, and we were certainly willing to bond our participation, our investment in these good projects. Going forward, and as Mr. Williams points out, and Mr. Jenkins as well, there's no policy that's been set by this county to now all of a sudden exclude and not pay attention to the great need of communities that are, say, non-target communities. We've always understood that these things go down a parallel track. There is a There is a goal and objective that we have set that has to do with the settlement, and there is a goal and objective that we set long ago that has to do with continuing to put into the inventory of our communities great housing for our people. I don't know of any meeting where a majority of this board sat around and said, we are no longer going to do that. That is something we have never entertained. And so what we need to make sure that our actions going forward are actions that allow us to participate fully with respect to achieving both goals.
Ms. Breckman.
Okay. I want to go back 17 years. For 17 years, I have been on housing. I've been with you, Jose, and Lois, and myself, and some of us have been there. There was a thing called Patterns, if you remember. And Patterns, when I came on housing, said, and I saw papers, and I went to Greenberg, and I went to meeting after meeting after meeting with you, okay? They did say that we have too much housing in Yonkers, in Mount Vernon, okay, on this side of 287. They did say, and there was in Patterns, that we did have to build in other places in northern Westchester where there were none, and that was it. This is before this settlement came about. I have always, always worked for housing, always voted for housing, both in Yonkers and in Mount Vernon and wherever I had to, because the county needed it, okay? But there was things that were said. And in this segregation case, there was a part that Mary read to me from that seat that said that they needed 3-bedroom apartments at that particular time. We must have it. It was not part of the agreement that I voted for. It all of a sudden came about. And I think it was taken away as one of the things that was taken away right now, okay? If we need it, we need it. I feel that if people want it and they could sell it, and we should have it. All I'm saying is I'm listening very carefully. I've been there, I did it, and I'll continue to do it. But there were things that were told to me, Northern Westchester doesn't have this. And they had places that have nothing, and even people took money from
development grant money.
Right. Yeah. To build houses, okay, and they had to because they wanted that grant, okay. As I said before, you ask me, I've been there, and again, I think it's very important. I think where it's needed, it's important. I will be there, you could count on me, but I have to say what's right is right, and what happened. Thank you.
Fair enough. Any other comments by members of either committee? Then if I may have a motion on the three component pieces of this, the property conveyance, which is ID 504594, the IMA, which is item 504595, and the Bond Act, which is item 4596.
So moved.
Motion on all three. I'm sorry, who made that motion? Mr. Mazzano.
Yes.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Nona. Any comments? If not, I'll call for a vote unless you have
Mr. Jefferson. No. Let me do my committee. I could accept your motion, Mr. Mazzano, for my committee, and Mr. Nona doesn't sit on my committee. So I need a second for...
So I will.
Bill, I'm all Republican on this.
I'll
make the motion for housing.
Troublemaker.
I'm
trying to help you.
All right, move things along. Then we'll reconstruct this. Motion for housing, planning, and operations was made by Mr. Nona, seconded by whom?
I'll second.
We're going to second by Mr. Harkin. The motion for budget and appropriation was made by Mr. Mizana, seconded by Ms. Spreckman. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
So we now have that. No discussion, therefore, for both committees, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you very much. Is there any other business to appear before HPO?
I think this item is joint with...
No, they've already signed it out.
I asked him, and he says he has not signed.
I thought we had signed it out. Norma, had we signed this out conditional on certain information being received?
No, 55 Pleasant Avenue was signed out without conditions.
The Pleasantville one was signed out.
Our development was signed out with conditions.
That's not in front of us today.
I stand corrected, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so you did sign it out, so
yes.
you could then adjourn your
committee. Okay, then I'm going to accept the motion to adjourn HPO, moved by Mr. Nona, seconded by Ms. Williams. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
HPO is adjourned. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
All yours.
Don't yes. leave till you sign.
Yeah, not anybody.
In the interest of time, I learned of an item, item 4561 and 4559, that has already been visited by housing. That has a time sensitivity to it, per your request, Mr. Drummond. I would place these two items on the budget agenda for further discussion and clarification. Yeah.